Recording excerpted.
So on to item 14, an educational presentation on the Brown Act.
My disappearing act at this point is not meant in a commentary in any way on Karen and her presentation and the other ones. I'm supposed to be in Monterey at 5 o'clock, so
I have,
I have to boogie down 680. So okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Good luck.
Thanks, Harvey.
Thanks, Karen.
Okay, it's okay.
Yes.
Awfully in.
Okay. So in the interest of time, I will keep this brief. I won't be using the overhead, so you do have a copy of all the slides in your agenda packet. And we are going, we talked about how as a board, as trustees, you need to be familiar with items that you're discussing, considering taking action. Such as CSERA, the CSERA Board of Retirement, and it sets forth the rules regarding open meetings. Agency deliberations are also conducted openly. So retirement board meetings must be open and accessible to the public. A board meeting agenda must be posted publicly, and during board meetings, the public must be given an opportunity to comment. So the premise behind this is that the public has to have notice of what's coming, notice via an agenda of what topics the board is going to be deliberating on and possibly taking action on, and also have the opportunity to be present and to contribute, to make comment. And that's why our meetings are open to the public. And the Brown Act defines what a meeting is. Obviously, what is happening right now is a board meeting, and that is open to the public, but it the definition is broader than that. If this board were to meet elsewhere, let's say in someone's living room, have some wine and some food, and start talking about a topic that is within the jurisdiction of the board, that would actually be a meeting, and under the Brown Act, that is subject to these rules. So it should have been noticed, an agenda should have gone out, it should have been held in a place that is open to the public. And that's really the purpose behind the Brown Act, and the reason why it came about is, you know, you have your local city council or some other board having discussions, maybe taking actions, or just having discussions about a topic that the public has a right to be aware of, to know it's coming, and to plan whether they want to come in and participate. And so that's why this law came about. We talk about serial meetings when we talk about the Brown Act, because that's another type of meeting that may not seem like a meeting, but it really is under the Brown Act. And that's where you have a series of communication. For example, you have Trustee A talking to Trustee B, and then 5 days later, Trustee B talks to C, and so on, and then you get to Trustee E, so you have five. We have a quorum of five here in the board. And serially, you have this communication that now includes five board members about a topic that is relevant to CSERA that really should be done in this forum. After an agenda has been posted, the topic is known to the public, and the public has an opportunity to be present and participate. There are some exceptions to this, and so if the board is attending a conference that is useful for the trustees, and the conference is open to the public, then a majority of the board can attend, but they have to refrain from talking to each other about CSERA business. Also, the attendance at a purely social event is allowed under the Act, under the Brown Act. But again, the trustees have to refrain from talking about subjects within the jurisdiction of CSERA. There is a voting report requirement in the Brown Act, and so the board must publicly report any action taken and the vote or abstention of each member present for the action. Thank you, Todd, for complying with that. That's why Todd is always writing down everyone's names as you vote. Next, we'll talk specifically about the agenda requirement. We actually spend a lot of time on the agendas and make sure that the agendas do what they're supposed to do, and that is to provide sufficient detail to the public about what the topic is that the board is going to be deliberating on and acting on. That has to be provided to the public at least 72 hours before a regular board meeting. And it has to be, the agenda has to be posted on the CSERA website. That is a legal requirement. It has to be done at least 72 hours before the meeting. Now, if an item is not included on the agenda, the board may not discuss it, may not take action, but there are exceptions to that. So one exception is if the board would like to ask a question, ask direct staff to come back with a report about a certain topic, or ask that a certain item be placed on a future agenda, that can be done, even though that particular topic was not on the agenda. Also, if there is a urgent matter that comes up, and it came up after the posting of the agenda, and it's so urgent that the board feels that they have to act on it that day, even though it's not on the agenda for that day, there is a process under the Brown Act that we can follow to allow discussion and even action on that case. It happens very rarely. We've had maybe one or two litigation matters that came up that way where something occurred the day before that required immediate action. And so even though the topic was not on the agenda, the board was able to discuss it. As far as public comment, again, this is where the public gets an opportunity to participate. We have to allow them the opportunity to make comment on each subject that's on the agenda or generally about a CSERA topic that they would like to address the board about. The Brown Act does say that the board may limit the time for public comment, and that's perfectly fine. I think the board has done that when we've had issues that were expected to take a very long time. So we talked about the openness and transparency, but there are also certain topics that are able to be handled in closed session. When that's done, there has to be a particular exemption in the Brown Act that allows it, and some of those particular exemptions are for pending litigation, for anticipated litigation against CSERA or its board, or if the board would like to confer with legal counsel about whether to initiate litigation. Matters such as disability application, deliberations and action, that can happen in closed session under the personnel exemption of the Brown Act. And also the board may meet in closed session to deliberate or take action on the purchase or sale of a particular specific pension fund investment. With all of these exemptions that allow the board to go into closed session, there are specific requirements about what the report, whether there will be a report out to the public or not, and what that report should say. And so, for example, with a disability application that is discussed and decided in closed session, the board then has to report to the public exactly what the vote was and whether the application was denied or granted. Closed session confidentiality. So all of the communications that are happening in closed session are confidential. They have to remain confidential. And then we talk about the consequences of violating the Brown Act. And so this is such an important aspect of government that there's actually criminal liability for individual board member violations. There's also civil remedies. Civil actions to stop, prevent, or invalidate the board action. And the prevailing plaintiff, so if somebody sued CSERA or the board for a violation of the Brown Act and prevailed, then they get their attorney's fees and costs awarded to them. I do have an example of a fairly recent case from 2017. Hernandez versus the town of Apple Valley. And in that case, the town had an agenda, and the agenda stated something like direction to staff about a ballot initiative. And what really took place was the city council entered into a contract with Walmart, whereby Walmart would grant the city a gift of about $750,000 to be used for a special election. And at that special election, the ballot initiative would allow Walmart to develop some land in the city territory. And the agenda obviously didn't specify any of that. And so the ballot initiative actually went through and was voted, and then a citizen looked back at the agendas and said, you know, I didn't know from the agenda description that this was going to happen. And so he sued, that's Mr. Hernandez, and he won. The Court of Appeal agreed with him and looked at the agenda description, even though some of the backup documentations had a lot of this information, not all of it. The agenda description itself was kind of misleading and definitely not enough, not sufficient. And so the consequence of him winning the case against the city was that the ballot initiative was invalidated, null and void. It never happened. And also, would anyone care to guess what else the court did? What can a plaintiff get if they sue a governmental agency for violating the Brown Act?
Attorney's fees.
Attorney fees and costs.
And costs.
So they had to pay him about $35,000 in attorney fees that he incurred. So those are the possible consequences of violating the Brown Act, which is why we spend a few minutes each year talking to you about it. And our staff is very well versed in these requirements and spends a lot of time reviewing agendas and memos and things that go in the agenda packet to make sure that if a member of the public is looking at the agenda, they are getting the transparency that they're entitled to. Are there any questions?
Don't see any. All right, so that was part one, right? Item 15.